This is again in collaboration with Linking this time and Jeff. And okay, so in the previous episode, we've heard that, I mean, this is just going to be a short overview of the previous one. So you've heard about the spin-four model, and the partition function was defined by contractions of projectors, which had those holomorphic symplicity constraints imposed on them, and these projectors were of this form. The crucial part is that we have two copies of, we have spinners which are on the left part of the projector and spinners which are on the right part of the projector, plus some weight that comes from the simplicity constraints. So a part of the partition function for a four simplex is then simply some integral over internal spinners times a times a product of five projectors here. So we can perform this kind of integrals by using the fact that these constraint projectors, which we have here, you can see that they're always functions of, well, it's a sum over spins J. And this term in front plus these numerical factors just depend on J. So we're able to track homogeneity of each term, homogeneity of J, by some parameter tau. And we can just exponentiate this projector to a form of exponential of tau ZZ. So if we took this thing and expanded it in power series, then for each factor of tau to the J, we would just substitute the factor of our hypergeometric function and the numerical factor, we would get back to our constraint projector. So for what will follow, I'll need a little bit of results in Gaussian integrals. So we'll have to consider an integral of a constraint projector over one of the spinners. We had Zs and Ws. I'll set one of the Ws to be a Z, and then integrate over it. So I'll do, just to recall, we have a measure of integration, which is a Gaussian measure. There is a e to minus zz. This is just an integral over C2. So there's four real numbers here. And then there's our projector here. So this is like the usual Gaussian integrals. The result of a Gaussian integral is you get the exponential of whatever was left over times one over determinant. So one of the crucial results is that we can evaluate these determinants in terms of spinners. So there's this neat thing that a determinant of this expression, where we had two spinners here, is just simply one minus a contraction of these two spinners, and then more contractions. So the integral we just computed graphically can be represented this way. So we had our projector, and then we just took a loop and integrated it out. So in a bigger graph, this would correspond to integrating out a face in the interior of some triangulation. But this is not enough if we wanted to correspond to gravity or any BF theory or anything like that, because we would have to add a factor. Was this 2j plus 1 for each face. So the way we add this factor of the face weight is by changing our measure of integration. We could take our previous measure and multiply it by some insertion of an operator. In this case, 2j plus 1 is given by a very simple operator. This is based on work by Maite and Levine. So this modified integral is basically just a Gaussian integral. And this is a Gaussian integral with a polynomial in front of it. So it's nearly the same form with one exception that we have this kind of one minus determinant on top. So this is all we need to actually calculate basically anything in the theory. So in BF theory, this integral reduces to something very trivial. The loop just integrates out and this vanishes. So this projector becomes an identity. How much time do I have? 12 minutes. I'm going really, really fast. Okay, so this projector becomes an identity in the sense that I just have, I don't have any projector here anymore, and this is just an exponential of ZW and sum over these strands. So now, recall when we imposed simplicity constraints, our projector was modified. We had the left and the right spinners equal to each other. So there was some kind of mixing between things happening. And this mixing actually happens in this integral as well. And this is the non-trivial thing happening with spin foam models that have simplicity constraints on them, is that explicitly when we do this integral, there is no fun simplification happening. Like in this case, there's a magic simplification happening that decouples things, which doesn't happen for a model with simplicity constraints. Explicitly, what happens is that this becomes nearly the projector that we had in this case. In this case, it was just a product of Z going to a W. And this, in our constraint case, we have a term that is Z and W. So just passage like this. But there's unfortunately also terms which are mixed, which mix all these Zs and these Ws together. So what we end up with is not a structure of, well, trivial identity between projectors. We get a six-violent intertwiner with some non-trivial weight, depending on the simplicity constraints, and some extra numerical factor. Okay. So I'll probably end up quickly. So now we want to apply these loop identities as we have calculated and see what happens to calculations of Pachner moves. So we will start with the simpler move, which is the 4-to-2 move. It's not the coarse graining move, but it's a move that it's well, from in four dimensions, there's three types of moves. There is the 5-to-1 move, the 4-to-2 move, and the 3-to-3 move. And classically, the regular calculus is invariant under the 4-to-2 and 5-to-1, whereas the BF theory is invariant under all of the Pachner moves. So we would like to, 4-to-2 move is something that basically corresponds to taking four simplices and gluing in them in such a way that there's two simplices on the boundary. So maybe graphically, we have four simplices, and they share four faces. We have these faces in color, if you can see them. And now we want to integrate this thing and see what we get. So in order to do this, we might notice that on each face, well, let's take the blue one as the easiest one, there's three projectors. So you would ask me, well, you did your group, your loop identity. There was just one projector on it, and how can you do this? So there's this thing that on spin networks, we have a huge extra, well, in the theory, we have extra symmetry, which is the spin force symmetry. And that one can be gauge fixed. And the gauge fixing procedure is that we choose a maximal tree on this graph and get rid of the projectors on this graph. So this is, I think, best citation for this is in Laurence and Natera's paper on non-compact spin networks. So after gauge fixing these spin force symmetry, we can we'll be left over with just integrating three loops, and there will be no more internal projectors to be integrated out. So there will be one last loop which has no projectors on it, and which in BF case would just pop out as a factor of divergence. But well, what happens for us is not so trivial, is we get these two force implices that I talked about, they're grouped together. But there is a non-trivial mixing because of on different strands in the strand group with some loop that we had here. And this is because of this mixing in the loop identity. So you might say that this looks a bit non-symmetrical. We did something that was symmetric at the beginning, and this is due to this specific choice of gauge fixing, but we could symmetrize over it and we get some kind of non-local mixing in here that would be more symmetric. So, well, you might say, okay, so 42 move is not invariant. Well, let's live with it, because this thing is not identity. This is not a delta function. This is something that non-trivially mixes strands and encodes perhaps local degrees of freedom. So let's go on to 5-to-1 move. This one is a bit more complicated. Has 10 loops. I tried to put it in color. I don't know if you can see it. So again, we would have to do some kind of gauge fixing. We choose a maximal tree. Here, the maximal tree is actually very easy to see. You can start here and then just create a tree without any loops in it. So now we can more time? Yes. 20. Okay. So again, we can try to integrate 10 loops. And we can integrate 6 of them, and then we have gotten rid of all the projectors that we had. So we're left with something like this. So we integrated it out, and we are left with a single force simplex with a heart inside, with, again, some kind of non-local mixture of strands. And, well, this is, again, not symmetric because of the gauge fixing, but let's try to discuss what this actually means. So we can think of these mixings and, in general, the whole loop that we have here inside as an insertion of some kind of operator, and it's a non-local insertion operator. And indeed, it has been shown in a paper by Levine and Tambornino that grasping operators and Wilson loops can be written in terms of such products of spinners that we're using for writing these partition functions. And grasping operators are operators out of which you can construct any geometrical operator in loop quantum gravity. For example, volume operator and so on are constructed exactly out of this kind of graspings. So perhaps this is some kind of insertion operator that encodes the non-local degrees of freedom, but it's not obvious because it's a very complicated expression. So one more thing is we know that these things are divergent. In BF theory, this would be something that's just pure divergence, just delta functions. In our case, this is not so clear. There's the mixing of strands mixed together with this divergence. And you might have the expectation, well, we have divergence, so the usual expectation in the field is if there's divergence, there's symmetry. And that's perhaps true, but the only case we know this to be true is in the Ponzano-Reggio model. And that's for a model that's already at the fixed point of randomization flow. So it's not obvious to say that away from the fixed point of RG, we would get any correlation between divergences and symmetry. So there is no obvious procedure in which we could do gauge fixing of this thing. So it would be interesting to know if this this non-locality is related to this recently found non-locality by Bianca, Sebastian, and Wojtek, in which they looked at linear Legendre calculus and quantized it, and they showed that there is a non-local measure for 5-to-1 and 42 moves. But, I mean, they got an action that was invariant, just the partition function was not. So a natural question is this non-locality specific to this model? And obviously, the exact form of it is, but we would expect that similar behavior is also true for other models. And this obviously should be checked. But this is naturally from the fact that when we impose simplicity constraints, we get, in this strand picture, we get mixings between strands. And it's a mixing that's not of the sort that we get in BF. And only in the BF case do we get something that factorizes nicely. So probably the best way to say this is that these non-localities stem from the same place as non-local couplings in real space in the normalization group. This is basically, we did the first step of coarse graining, and we didn't do any truncation. So there, you always get into this issue. And you know, we have the expectation that at a fixed point, we would want to have invariants of the partition function under 5-to-1 move. But obviously, this thing is not invariant. So we need some kind of truncation to get locality. And this is work in progress. And one thing is, for example, you would want to use some things that are in the field already there, but we can use tensor network methods in 4D spin forms. For one reason, because it's a 4D model, and this is still probably work in progress how to impose it. The second one is we're working with non-regular lattices. So if you're working with a hypercubic lattice, then there's lots of methods in the market how to do renormalization. But for non-regular things, it's not so obvious. And we would need some kind of optimal truncation. So there's some ideas that we have. We could keep the most divergent part. This would probably get rid of the non-locality. But this might be a bit too crude of an approximation. Probably better one is to look at the asymptotic limit of this thing and just require that the asymptotics are that of the previous step. This would define you a flow equation in which you would be able to truncate while keeping, well, while modifying the projectors every time. Yeah. And OK, I'll finish, and then I'll let Bianca say something. Yeah.